attachment, so to speak, is affection. It goes all the time. You know, if my dog would die, it fills my heart, faster than knowledge. If he is my Lord,
you know, if someone has a dime or something, you can actually tighten the screw and it won't do this. Or it's a little screwdriver or something like that. Here we go. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi jana vala bhangiri varandhari Jai Gopi jana vala bhangiri varandhari Yashoda Nandana Vajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janavala Bhagiri Varadhari Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaran Hari. Yashodanandana Bhajajana Ranjana. Yashodanandana Bhajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjambihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari.
Jai Mr. Bhad Paramahansa Buddhika Acharya Pashto Tirtha Shri Shrimad His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan BBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Mishnupad Paramahansa Buddhika Acharya Ashto Tirtha Shri Shrimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Narayana Namaskritya. Nadam chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jai mudiriyet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, and to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta prayesha badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyuttama shloke bhaktim bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 23rd day of December, 2013, in Chicago, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, second chapter, verse number 36. Tasmat sarvatmana rajan hadi sarvatra sarvada shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyo bhagavan nunam tasmat sarvatmana rajan hadi sarvatra sarvada Shrotam Yakirti Tavyascha. Smartam Yo Bhagavan Ranam. Tasmat Sarvatmana Rajan. Hadi Sarvatra Sarvada. Shrotam Yakirti Tavyascha. Smartam Yo Bhagavan Ranam. Tasmat Sarvatmana Rajan. Hadi Sarvatra Sarvada. Shrotavya Kirtitam Vyascha. Bhagavan Ranam. Tasmat Sarvatmana Rajan. Hari Sarvatra Sarvada. Shortavya Kirtitam Vyascha. Smartavyo Bhagavan Ranam. Tasmat Sarvatmana Rajan. Hari Sarvatra Sarvada. Shrotavya Kirtitam Vyascha. Smartavyo Bhagavan Ranam. Ladies? Tasmat Sarvatmana Rajan. Hari Sarvatra Sarvada. Shrotavya Kirtitam Vyascha. Smartam Yo Bhagavan Ranam. Anyone else? Tasmat Sarvatmana Rajan. Hari Sarvatra Sarvada. Shrotavya Kirtitam Vyascha. Smartam Yo Bhagavan Ranam. Tasmat, therefore, sarva, all, atmana, soul, rajan, O king, harihi, the Lord, sarvatra, everywhere, sarvada, always, shrotavya, must be heard, Kirtitavyaha, glorified, cha, also, smartavyaha, be remembered, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, nirnam, by the human being. Translation, O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Purport. Srila Sukadeva Goswami begins this verse with the word tasmat, or therefore, because in the previous verse he has already explained that there is no auspicious means for salvation other than the sublime process of bhakti yoga. The bhakti yoga process is practiced by the devotees in different methods like hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping, praying, rendering service in love, becoming friendly, and offering all that one may possess. All nine methods are bona fide methods, and either all of them, some of them, or even one of them can bring about the desired result for the sincere devotee. But out of all the nine different methods, the first one, namely hearing, is the most important function in the process of bhakti yoga. Without hearing sufficiently and properly, no one can make any progress by any of the methods of practice. And for hearing only, all the Vedic literatures are there, compiled by authorized persons like Vyasadeva,
who is the powerful incarnation of Godhead. And since it has been ascertained that the Lord is the supersoul of everything, he should therefore be heard and glorified everywhere and always. That is the special duty of the human being. When the human being gives up the process of hearing about the all-pervading personality of Godhead, he becomes victim to hearing rubbish transmitted by man-made machines. I'm going to read that again. When the human being gives up the process of hearing about the all-pervading personality of Godhead, he becomes victim to hearing rubbish transmitted by man-made machines. Machinery is not bad because through the machine one can take advantage of hearing about the Lord. But because machinery is used for ulterior purposes, it is creating rapid degradation in the standard of human civilization. It is said here that it is incumbent upon the human beings to hear, because the scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are made for that purpose. Living beings other than human beings have no ability to hear such Vedic literatures. If human society gives itself to the process of hearing the Vedic literature, it will not become a victim to the impious sounds vibrated by impious men who degrade the standards of the total society. Hearing is solidified by the process of chanting. One who has perfectly heard from the perfect source becomes convinced about the all-pervading personality of Godhead and thus becomes enthusiastic in glorifying the Lord. All the great acharyas like Ramanuja, Madhva, Chaitanya, Saraswati Thakur, or even in other countries, Muhammad, Christ, and others, have all extensively glorified the Lord by chanting always and in every place. Because the Lord is all-pervading, it is essential to glorify him always and everywhere. In the process of glorifying the Lord, there should be no restriction of time and space. This is called Sanatan Dharma or Bhagavat Dharma. Sanatan means eternal, always and everywhere. Bhagavat means pertaining to Bhagavan, the Lord. The Lord is the master of all time and all space. And therefore, the Lord's holy name must be heard, glorified, and remembered everywhere in the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity so eagerly awaited by the people of the world. The word cha includes, in the verse, the word cha includes all the remaining processes or methods of bhakti yoga as mentioned above. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmidatamena tasmai shri gurave namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So I thought I would choose this verse out of many that we could have chosen in the Bhagavatam, emphasizing hearing, chanting, and remembering. And as I was meditating on this class, I was thinking of the Bhagavad Gita as well. We really should read the Bhagavad Gita every day. The Bhagavad Gita gives us all of the processes of devotional service, the ontological position of Krishna, and it's an essential work. And so many times in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, fix your mind on me. He's telling Arjuna, isn't it? I was just thinking in the 12th chapter. The 12th chapter is called Bhakti Yoga. Very short, very essential, to the point chapter, all about Bhakti Yoga. And when Arjuna asks, who is the best yogi? Someone who's meditating on you, who's serving you, or someone who's meditating on the impersonal absolute? So Krishna answers very distinctly. He answers very without any hesitation. Those who are meditating on my transcendental form, who've dedicated themselves to me, are the best. And then he reiterates that a few verses later. He says, Mayeva manadatsva mai buddhim nibeshaya. Nibasishisi mayeva at urdvam nasangshaya. And he says there, just fix your mind on me. Engage your intelligence in me. Thus you will live with me always. You will come up. You will come back to Godhead. Atta urdhvam na sankshaya. There's no doubt about it. And there's many other places in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is enjoining us to fix our mind on him. So this is the basic principle of yoga. And of course, bhakti yoga is the highest yoga. And when we talk about hearing, chanting, and remembering, this is the most practical means and efficient means, especially in this age, for fixing the mind on Krishna. There's a beautiful verse in the Vedic literature that says, smartavyak satatam Vishnu, vismartavyo na jatuchit, sava vidhi nisheda ksur ete oreva kinkara. And what that says is, one should always remember Vishnu, Krishna. Smartavyak satatam, satatam always and everywhere, Vishnu. And one should never forget him. All of the Vidhi and the Sheda, all of the rules and regulations, other rules and regulations, are servants of these. In other words, everything is meant to bring us to this point. Now, when I first read this verse, I said, well, isn't this redundant? It sounds redundant. In the sense that you should always remember me, never forget me. Isn't that the same? But there is a subtle difference there. And it's an important difference. And it comes out in the difference between Vidhi and the Sheda. Vidhi and the Sheda. Prabhupada calls it rules and regulations. Now, in English, there's not that much difference, you know. But what he means there are the do's and the don'ts. The do's and the don'ts. And we learn from the literature that the process of surrender to Krishna begins with the do's and the don'ts. Accepting those things favorable and rejecting those things unfavorable. Now, there's a big list of the favorable and there's a big list of the unfavorable. So surrender is not such an easy thing, to accept everything favorable for devotional service and reject all the unfavorable things. So when it comes to remembering, the idea is that we should do all of those things that help us to remember Krishna. And we should avoid all those things that induce us to forget Krishna. Both sides are there. So all of the other things that we do, like coming to Mangal Arati, right? This is Prabhupada wanted us to do that. He set up the morning program. Come to Mangal Arati, worship the deity, worship the guru, worship the deity, all these different things. And everything else is meant to bring us to that point of always remembering Krishna. Now, Krishna doesn't just mean Krishna alone. Krishna means Krishna and Radha and all of the coward boys, coward girls. It means the devotees of Krishna. It means the spiritual master. All of these things. They're included. But that's the point. In other words, to focus the mind on Krishna as he enjoins us in the Bhagavad Gita. So in this Srimad Bhagavatam, now, this is the cream of all the Vedic literatures. Right? In other words, this was written last by the great Vyasadeva. And as we learn in the first canto, that he'd written everything else but wasn't completely satisfied. And he was in some distress. He also suspected why. And then Narada Muni, his Gurudev, appears and explains why. Because you haven't sufficiently glorified and exclusively glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his devotional service, his devotees, to the exclusion of everything else. Your other literatures may include some of that. Certainly the Mahabharata includes the Bhagavad Gita. But there's so many other things in the Mahabharata that you can get diverted into. You know, it wasn't exclusively, and it didn't, you know, sufficiently glorify Krishna in his, especially the Leela in Vrindavan and so many other things. So as we heard these verses, so the instruction was you meditate, Maharaj was explaining, and in your trance you'll be able to understand, you fully will understand the Leela of Krishna, you'll have a revelation, and then you'll write that. And so he meditated, bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite amale apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha yadapashriyam. This is what the verse describing that. As it's explained, Jiva Goswami, he emphasizes this in the next few verses in his Sandarbhas. I know in Tattva Sandarbha there's a whole section describing, in other Sandarbhas it's mentioned. Why is it so significant? Well, this is the actual way in which the Bhagavatam has appeared, you know, through the agency of Vyasadeva and the trance of Vyasadeva. So he's having this revelation now. So what did he see in his trance of Bhakti Yoga? He saw the Supreme Person, Krishna, Purnam. Purnam is the complete Supreme Person. And he saw his energy, in this case Maya, under his shelter. Which means that he's never, this is why he's known as Achyuta. He can never fall under the influence of the external energy. So then, what's the next verse? Yaya sammahito jiva atmanam jigunatmakam pado bimanato nartam yatkripam chabipadyate. So by that maya, he's seeing all this in trance. What's going on? Sammohita jiva. The jivas in this world, the conditioned souls, are completely bewildered. Sammohito jiva. Atmanam jiganatmanam pi. Although they are transcendental to the three gunas, they're identifying themselves with the gunas and therefore experiencing all kinds of suffering. And that's our situation. He's seeing us. Lifetime after lifetime, we identify with whatever body we happen to be in. Human, subhuman, superhuman, demigod body. We're always thinking, this is who I am. And various, you know, unlimited varieties of states, we identify with that particular state. And we experience suffering because it's temporary, birth, death, old age, disease. So this is all due, and as we turn away from Krishna, we embrace the external energy, you know, Maya, and she embraces us, if you will, and we're completely illusion. We develop all of these anartas, you know, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, identification with the body, fear. All of that is in the mix in our consciousness. So they have to be cleansed away. And the process is by bhakti yoga. So the next verse says, anarto bhishamam sakshad bhakti yoga madhokshaje. By devotional service to adhokshaja, to Krishna. Now this word is very significant, adhokshaja. It's used repeatedly in the Bhagavatam. And to describe Krishna. It's a name for Krishna. So Prabhupada describes it in one purport, when he's speaking, not a purport, but in a class, when he's talking about, to 126, that verse, Savai Pungsang Paro Dharma. Adhoksha Ja, it's made of three different elements, Adha, Aksha, Ja. Now Ja, when you see Ja, it always has something to do with generation or birth, like Janma. So Aksha Ja refers to the knowledge or understanding that's generated from your senses, led by the eyes. Aksha, that stands in for all the senses. In other words, material knowledge that we can glean from our senses and our mind. But as we know, it's limited. The mind and senses are imperfect. We have these four defects. The senses are certainly limited. Our mind is certainly limited. So any knowledge we glean cannot give us accurate knowledge about that which is beyond the senses, obviously. And that's the supreme transcendence, the absolute truth, who is transcendental. So Adha means down. So Krishna is completely transcendental, beyond the range of material mind and senses. He defeats all material knowledge, all material attempts to know him. But that's who we have to serve. So how are we going to serve something we can't see, we can't perceive, we can't understand? We need an intervention. From Krishna himself or from his representative. And that's why it always says the Tattva Darshi in the fourth chapter. From someone who has seen the truth, that's who you have to surrender to and serve and ask questions. And then they can impart knowledge to you. And so, understanding that people are in distress, it all emanates out of compassion. Vyasadeva is seeing the condition, especially in the coming Kali Yuga, that people are going to be suffering so much. And being a real Vaishnav, you know, one of the phrases, padadukka dukki, who can say what that means, you know? Padadukka dukki. Exactly.
It's just the opposite of, you know, they had this thing in the war, came out of the Schadenfreude. You ever heard of Schadenfreude? Paradukasuki. Yeah. You had this, like, the you know, vicious mentality. Just the opposite. Devotee is very kind-hearted. Paradukaduki, you're empathetic, sympathetic to others' suffering. This is part of, you know, a real Vaishnava. So Vyasadeva is feeling that, as are all the sages in Naimasharanya, they're concerned about us. And so, he wrote all the literatures for that purpose, but now this is the key one. This is the final one. And so he's in his trance, he's seeing anato, the anartas, anato bhashamam sakshad, can be directly mitigated, wiped away by the process of bhakti yoga. But alas, lokasya janato. The people don't know that. They're in ignorance. Therefore, he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. You see. And then the very next verse talks about hearing the Bhagavatam. What's it? Yasyam vai shuyamanayam, shuyamanayam, krishne paramapuruse, bhakti yudpatate pungsa, shoka moha bayapaha. And by hearing this literature that he's about to write from this inspiration, it is saying there, that bhakti to Krishna awakens automatically. Krishna, the devotional service to Krishna awakens in the heart of the conditioned soul because it's already there. The idea is not something new. It's already there, but it's covered. It's being misdirected to this material energy, the natural affection and love. And what's the first, not the only, but the first benefits of that? Shoka, moha, bayapaha. The lamentation, illusion, and fear is destroyed, is taken away. And beyond that, we know that you actually experience the higher levels of bhakti. You know, attachment to Krishna, ecstasy, love for Krishna, all of it comes about by this. So, back to our verse. So hearing is so important, but hearing what? Hearing Bhagavatam. Well, those words that are in the line of the Bhagavatam. In other words, hearing directly about Krishna from the proper source. And so, at the end of this chapter, now there's a whole development, as in any book, there's a logical development here. So, there's been a series of verses, beginning with the very beginning of the second canto, 2:1, 1:2, 3:4, 5, which is answering this basic question of Parikkhita, which we should all ask. What should one do? What should one think about? What should one hear and chant? How should you direct your mind as death approaches? Remember, it's a very dramatic situation, as the Bhagavad Gita is also. Parikkhita has been cursed to die in 7 days by this bite of this snake bird. And so he naturally asks, well, what should I do? What should I think about as death approaches? And so the first verse of the second canto, he praises the question. Bhadiyanishate prashna. Very nice question. The answer to this question can benefit all humanity. When discussion of Krishna takes place, the hearer, the chanter, and everyone who's listening benefits enormously. When there's a proper hearer and a proper chanter. That's reiterated in the Bhagavatam. So who could be better hearers and chanters? The Parikkhita is the ideal hearer, and Shukadeva is the ideal chanter. That's the point. So Shukadeva praises the question, and then he describes, as Prabhupada does here in the purport, how the materialistic sound vibrations are bewildering everybody. And they have millions of other subject matters besides this. Shrotavyadini Raja Indra Ninang Santi Sahasya Apashyatam Atmakchatvam Griheshu Vihamedina. The basic principle, those who are dedicated to materialistic household life, you know, nowadays, even to have a household life is thought to be, this is the ideal, if you can have materialistic household life, you know. Because so many people, they don't have a proper house, the marriage is broken, the children are over there, they can't get a job, they're threatened to be on the street. Household life is like the American dream, right? But here he's condemning that. You know what I'm saying? Oh, let me have my own house, and you know, in the suburbs, you know. That's condemned here. Because it's simply focused on material energy, completely forgetting the soul and your relationship with Krishna and everything. So they have millions, and what's the function? We went through this in our little seminar, you know. He gives two or three verses, you know.
At night, wasting time, sleeping too much, or having sex. During the day, running around trying to make money. And then on the weekend, spending the money to maintain the family. Yeah. That the Kutumba Bharane Nava, he directly says. And in all of this, one feels that I'm protected by my strong body, by my family, by my insurance policy. And these are called fallible soldiers. They cannot really protect you, you know. And so then this theme comes up of seeing. They see but don't see. We've seen who has survived in this world, you know. So many plans, you know, all the people who were born in the 20th century, early 20th century, they're all gone now. You know, they were the heroes. They had their plans. They had their empires. They had their families and everything. And it's all in dust. So there's no hope. But people are fixated on that. So then he has a verse very similar to this one. Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari. Here we go again. Shrotavyak Kititavyak Smartavyak Chechita Bayam. Now, Ichita Bayam. If you want fearlessness in the face of death, and we should all be conscious of that. This is one of the elements of knowledge. Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Dosha Darshana. Doesn't matter what age we are in, we are. Death could be around the corner, you know. So this is part of the gravity of Krishna consciousness. It's a serious business. So in that situation, which we all face, but, you know, he was facing it very dramatically because he was cursed to die in 7 days. This is what you should do. He invests in Bharata. Bhagavan Ishwarohari, he gives four different designations for Krishna. Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvatma, the Super Soul, the Supreme Controller, Ishvara, and Hari, Krishna, the remover of all distress. Hear about, chant about, and remember. This is the key. And this is the theme that we're dealing with here. So it all comes back to that. And everything, these three processes are helping us to become conscious of Krishna at all times and in all places. Because after all, this is what, you know, our goal is. Our goal is to become fully Krishna conscious. This is the Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now, what the benefits are, one may think, well, what's the benefit of that? Well, the benefits are like, more than anything you can imagine. Just think of like the basic, I'll read the next verse. There was another quote that I had here. Beautiful expression. Again in the second chapter. Yes. This is now Parikkhita speaking, and he is encouraging Shukadeva to go on reciting the Bhagavatam. This happens repeatedly, you know. And there's this wonderful description here. I'll just read this little section here. So now Parikkhita is speaking, and he's hearing the Bhagavatam, and he's saying, Shunvatak shudaya nityam grinnatas chasvacheshtitam kalena nati diyugena bhagavan vishate vidi. Persons who hear the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, manifested in their hearts within a short time. And then the next verse, Pravishtak karnarandraina. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is the Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship with Krishna, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon the pools of muddy water. Now just think about that a second. You know, the Bhagavatam itself is an incarnation of Krishna in sound. And so when we hear, and remember there's a quality to the hearing, that quality is mentioned throughout, at the beginning of shushusho, you remember this word, shushusho? It means with one-pointed attention and with receptivity. Prabhupada called it submissive oral reception. In other words, there's a quality to the hearing. And generally speaking, the mind is giving so much static, you know, because this is a challenge to the materialistic mind. In other words, we as conditioned souls, We're used to not surrendering to Krishna. We're used to trying to be independent enjoyers and controllers. And so the mind is in that state. Now, the intelligence, and this is the key element in human life, is that we have, that's what really distinguishes us from the animals, is the higher intelligence. We can direct the mind, you know. And we've all gone, you know, experienced it. You get up, you know, it's time to get up. If you don't get up now, you're not going to make it to Mangalarti, right? But that's just like your most modesy time, right? You're getting, and you have to make that decision. And like in Chicago, now in San Diego it's a little easier, but in Chicago, New York, where we were, it's usually very cold, you know, and you're in this nice warm sleeping bag, you know. So the mind is telling you no. And the the senses are, you know, are also telling you no. But then, you know, you remember. And this is the key. This is what you've internalized the, you know, the instruction of the spiritual master. And if you're in an ashram, there's the peer pressure. You know, what are they going to think about me? I'm, you know, I want to be a good devotee. So there's all of these things. And then the critical decision comes, you know, and you break out of that sleeping bag or whatever it is, you know, and you run into the shower. Now, I remember, you know, like some of the biggest surrender was had because there was no hot water in Brooklyn at that time. I don't remember. And it was, you know, winter time, like now. And then there's a cold shower. It's a cold shower, you know. So the mind, you know, is. But if you actually you get in there and you take your, you know, 20-second cold shower and you jump out, I'm a yogi. You feel like a yogi, you know. Not bad, you know, and run off to Mangalarti. But it's really like that, you know. So there's all of this. The mind and senses are pulling one way, the conditioned mind, you know. But as you get into it, you know, you're habituated. And this is why nityam, you know, every day. Then it becomes easier. The mind becomes surrender, you know, to even these elements, which are important. So there's a struggle. There's a struggle. And this is what sadhana is all about. But the mind is not so easy to curb down because it's been many, many millions of births that we've cultivated all this conditioning. And so this is where the sadhana comes in, to be able to focus the mind and surrender and hear properly. And that's why chanting is so important. Notice that you know, a kirtan, everybody gets to chant, right? It's not just a performance. Sometimes it can devolve into that, but that's not what it's meant to be. You know, I chant, you hear, you chant, I hear. We're meant to be constantly hearing, chanting, hearing like that. Because as Prabhupada says, the chanting confirms the hearing. You know? So when you chant, that, you know, if you're chanting and hearing nicely, you're automatically remembering. This is another thing that's mentioned here. That chanting and hearing, you got to be fixed. You know. So, but sometimes it's difficult to bring yourself to that point of surrendering to the chanting and hearing. Well, as we were chanting the japa, I mean, we all have experience, you know, you chant your japa. Okay, I'm hearing, you know, it's nice, just had a nice kirtan. I'm remembering the deities, chanting. But as, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, an hour, you know, the mind starts to assert itself, and there's so many things that come up, and you find, well, what happened? Did I even hear that round? You know, maybe I should chant it again. And it's a struggle. So, that's where the sadhana is. And just imagine, you know, as we're moving toward our, you know, 12th round, 16th round, just imagine doing that 12 of those 16 every day. This is what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did. That's the 192 rounds. That's your 300,000 names. It's actually more than that. You know, to get to that 16, you know, 16 rounds, we feel, oh, okay, we've met our quota. But just imagine that that's 1/12 of what you've set the quota is. Now that is the controlled mind. That is, you know, a real, real heroic, you know, meditation, full absorption. And the as mentioned here, you know, Krishna is non-different from that sound. We learn just about the holy name. You know, such an important, so many important descriptions. What is that? Vinadvan nama namino. How does it start? Nama chintamani, thank you. Nama chintamani Krishna's chaitanya rasa vigraha punak shuddho nitya mukto abhinadva nama namino. So the holy name is like a Chintamani gem. You know, that means you touch it with your, you touch the name with your consciousness, and it transforms you. It transforms the consciousness. It's proactive. It's not a dead sound. Chaitanya rasa vigraha, the very form of all the rasas. In other words, you can experience your rasa just by chanting, purely by coming to the point of it'll awaken it there, you know, like a touchstone active. It's complete. The complete process of yoga is there, chanting Hare Krishna. Shuddho Nityamukto. The holy name is eternally pure, purifies the chanter, and eternally liberated. You become liberated from all effects of the modes of nature. Now, why is that? Abhinatvanamanamino. Because the name is non-different from the named. There's no difference between Krishna and his name. Now, to realize that is an advanced state, but we should know that theoretically, at least. So when we chant and we hear nicely, Krishna enters into the heart. He's already there, but he manifests. And as we've heard repeatedly on this weekend, he purifies. He's purifying of us of all of these anartas and bringing us closer to him. He's clearing away all of the crud that's preventing us from seeing him who's already there. You see, that's how it's working. Krishna is already here. He's already everywhere and always, you know. But we've forgotten that. So it's a process of remembrance. So here he sits on the lotus flower of the loving relationship. Now, one thing I wanted to mention about the previous verse, of course, there's different ways of understanding the verse. And one of the ways, Vishwanath Chakravarti translates it, is that one who regularly and faithfully, Shunvatak Shraddhaya Nityam Grunata Svachachaschitam. Svachachaschitam can also refer to Krishna's lila, Krishna's activities. That's described in Bhagavatam. So one who is with faith always hearing Shunvatak and chanting repeatedly, repeating the lila of Krishna, the activities, quickly, without after a long time, Bhagavan, Krishna, enters into the heart. In other words, you feel his presence, and the impurities are quickly removed. So that's, you know, this is now the next verse here, you know, there's so many nectar verses, and we're going to have a practical, I want you to take something practical away from this little discourse, and that is, we're going to all memorize a verse before you go. Now, don't freak out. It's an English verse. But it's something you can take with you, and you can pray to the deity. So that's a coming attraction. So here at the back to the verse of the day. So what happens there, just to put it in context, at the beginning, as I was saying, the first question and the first answer has to do with hearing, chanting, and remembering. The Bhagavatam kind of begins again at the beginning of the second canto. You know, this is where Shukadeva actually starts speaking the Parikrit. The first canto was filled with, you know, wonderful, incredible instructions, and you know, we learn how Parikrit appeared, how the Bhagavatam got to be. But it's introductory. So it's beginning again, and the third, fourth verse is about hearing, chanting, remembering. And what is the benefit of that remembrance? Well, then there's this other famous verse right there. Etavan sankhya yogabhyam swadharma padinishtaya janmalavak parak pungsam ante narayana smritihi. The whole idea is we need to remember Krishna at the end of life. When this body finally falls, that's the final exam, at least for this go-around. You know, otherwise you're left back. You know, you got to repeat the course, right? So we want to try to get to that point. So here it says, whatever you do in terms of sankhya, you know, your discrimination and an analysis of this world, of yoga, or activity in your sradharma with varnashram dharma, it will be successful. Your birth will be successful if you can remember Narayan, Krishna, at the end of life. And that's the next verse after the one I just quoted. So that's what we're training for. Now, he starts with that, and then he goes off, and Parikrit asks, well, how should we practice yoga? And then he starts to talk about meditation on the super soul, and he even gets into talking about meditation on the Virat Rupa, you know, to see Krishna everywhere. And this is important, because the question always comes up, well, how can we do this? This is like hearing, chanting about Krishna always. I have to deal with my co-workers. I have to go do what I have to do.
in order to keep body and soul together in this world. I can't always be hearing and chanting about Krishna. Okay, well, that's a valid point. How can we increase our remembrance of Krishna even when everything around us is non-Krishna, so to speak? Well, one of the ways, you know, that this practical way here, he's saying is, well, see everything as part of the form of Krishna. This is what the whole meditation on Virat Rupa is. Virat Rupa, or the universal form, and there's different varieties of it, but the universal form as described here most often in Bhagavatam, 4 or 5 times, is a way in which you can see the whole world as part of Krishna. In other words, everything becomes sacralized, you know, becomes sacred. You never see anything as separate from God. You know, it's not just the sun. You don't just see the sun, but you see the eye of the Lord. You don't just see the river, but you see, oh, these are the veins of the body of the Lord. So that's here in the second canto, in the first 2 chapters. But then, now he's come to the point of saying something different. He's saying, but, you know, because after all, Parikkhita is there. He's not going to get up and start walking around and looking at the universal form. He's eventually, you know, he's going to hear the 10th canto. So he comes back to this point that we just read here. And then the next verse, yes, is this wonderful verse I share with you. I think we did this in the seminar. But here's what the Bhagavatam is all about, because you're meant to drink it. In other words, there's so much nectar in this Bhagavatam. Very third verse, drink it. It's the ripened fruit of the Vedas, as Prabhupada said in his immortal words in the synonyms of that verse, semi-soft and easily swallowable. You know, like a mango that's so ripe you practically have to drink it. That's what this Bhagavatam is, you know, super sweet. So here's this beautiful verse. Pabandi he bhagavata atmanaksatam katam mitam shavanabhuteshu sambitam punanti he vishayi vidushitashayam vajanti tat chalana sadoro hantikam. That's a wonderful slogan. The last verse of the second chapter, if you're interested, of the second canto. Those who drink through all reception, fully filled, fully satisfied, with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of God. This is the last verse of this chapter. So this is what, you know, is in store for us. If we actually cultivate this process and we maximize our hearing and chanting and repeating and giving this chance to others to hear and chant, that's what the preaching movement is all about, then we can begin to hear the Bhagavatam as pure nectar, the holy name as pure nectar. You know, that's a famous verse. We can't, you know, it's not such pure nectar now because our minds are covered by ignorance. The tongue is covered by the bile of ignorance, as in Upadeshamrita. So what's really sweet doesn't taste sweet, but it has intrinsic sweetness, and it'll become sweeter and sweeter. So these are some of the things I wanted to share. Let's see. We have some more time, and I had some other points to make. But if there's any questions so far, then we can do our memorization. Maharaj?
Jai.
Jai. Hari Bol.
Guru Tattva question. The definition of Adhoksaja, given those three parts to it, very, very nice. That's Krishna who's Adhoksaja. He's in that position. And then several times you spoke about, in addition to how we should hear, it was who we should hear from. In a number of ways, you've referred to the 434 verse with the Tattvadarshi.
Right.
So the person who's in touch with Adhoksaja, not the, you know, in this purview of the material sphere, but seer of the truth.
Right.
So now the question, what does that mean? Let me do a little more.
Okay.
Seer of the truth. Does it mean from the hearing process, I now have, with faith, identified he who is beyond So it's theoretical,
mm-hmm.
that the seer of the truth, or does it mean one who has actually seen the form of Shyamasundara? Does it mean that? Because he's the absolute truth.
Right.
Govindam is, he's, you know. So when we're wishing to hear from the right source, we have to hear in the right way, but we also have to identify the right source. How do we go about that? I mean, what? Where's the bar?
Right.
How high is the bar?
That's a very good question. Thank you, Maharaj. As you were speaking, I recall the first time that Prabhupada left New York. Because up until that point, class meant Prabhupada's giving class, right? They would do all of the hearing. I mean, in 26 Second Avenue, I'm talking like the very, you know, first beginning. And then, what? He's going to the West Coast? You know, he went to San Francisco. Many of you know the history. And then, what? I have to hear from this devotee, that devotee? How are we going to manage without Prabhupada directly? You know? And so, you know, it was understood gradually, okay, well, we'll repeat what we heard from Prabhupada. Right? And that's how we'll go on. And Prabhupada approved of that. In other words, yes, you know, now you hear from those who are a little more advanced, you know, the four-month devotee instead of the one-month devotee, he'll give the class, you know, and whatever as it goes on. So the basic principle is that the sound originates, you know, with Krishna, you know, and it comes down, you know, purely. And this whole idea of handing, you know, the parampara, it's handed down without distortion or, as Prabhupada said, ulterior motives. That's the first thing. And so this is our great fortune. We've all come in touch with Prabhupada. He reached out, inspired by his spiritual master and Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, empowered to do that and to give it purely. Certainly a tattvadarshi. But the question arises, well, okay, but I'm not a tattvadarshi. Can I give class? Why should they hear from me? Why should anyone hear from me? You know, well, we have the recordings and all that, but still, we were meant to have, you know, Prabhupada wanted us to come up to the standard. So the way I understand it is that if one is sincerely following the instructions of the real tattvadarshi, and is conversant, doesn't have to know all the verses, but is conversant with the philosophy and, you know, meeting the standard, studying nicely, then that person can also be, I don't want to use the word, but it is the word that really describes it, channel, is that you're also able to give that same knowledge and have its effect. You know, without practicing, you can't preach. In other words, it's not going to work if some materialist or impersonalist comes up here and talks about the Bhagavatam, you know. But as a devotee, if one is a sincere devotee and following, then they can also, it's not exactly equivalent, obviously, but it is still purifying, and the same energy, the same purification can take place to whatever degree the person is pure and knowledgeable. So that's how I understand it. Yeah.
I want to turn the topic a little more.
Go ahead.
And I'll just put it as a question. So the other day, someone came, congregation member, and they had a question about faith and surrender. Are the same? Are they different? How does it work? Because we hear about surrender. And so with that, those two distinctions, you know, they're connected, but they're distinct. With that distinction, I'm a new devotee. I've been introduced to the Hare Krishna movement, and I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, and I hear about this guru term, and I'm supposed to surrender to a guru, and Bhagavad Gita says a tattvadarshi, so how am I supposed to think of, and not just, you know, here, is it okay to hear class from Dravida Prabhu because he hasn't seen Shyamasundara yet?
Right.
Is it, you know, not just hear from you, but surrender and see as guru. So I want to, just a little other embellishment. I'm sure from your association with Badri Narayan Prabhu, you're quite familiar with that wonderful literature, the harmonizing lines of authority, and
yes. You
know, and making it, it's really important that the culture of the Hare Krishna movement doesn't just see the Diksha Guru, that whatever here Guru needs the Diksha Guru,
yeah.
They're persons who are delivering. So who are persons who are eligible, this new devotee, congregational member, or bhakta, or whatever? How is it, am I like shortchanging myself, or am I deluding myself if I don't have the faith that here's an individual, you've answered it, but I want you to expand it a little bit more, that they've seen Shyamasundar, and that's the person. I have to find that person. How do I know who that person is? I don't know, but I have to find that person, and otherwise, you know, I'm getting less than what I'm supposed to do and joined in Bhagavad Gita, the Tattva Darshi. That's the person I'm supposed to find.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to think of that?
Well,
in the varieties besides Diksha Guru.
Right, right. So the way I understand it is that the advantage, okay, because let's face it, we're not the only product in the market right now. You know, in other words, with the advent of the internet and devotees going everywhere, just the way history has developed, you're free to run off to Radhakund. No one can stop you, and see if you can find somebody who you feel is, seeing Shyamasundar in his heart at every moment, Radha Shyamasundar. You know, that's possible. The advantage of the ISKCON culture and serving within ISKCON, let's put it that way, is that you connect to Prabhupada. This is and when you realize who Prabhupada is, when you read about him and you understand, you read his books and so forth, and the exalted status and this idea of Sainapati, you know, the Sainapati means Lord Chaitanya's commander in chief, you know, empowered to deliver the whole world, you know. Through his books, through his words, through his devotees and everything, and his institution, then this is a great advantage. And so, what makes a genuine guru within ISKCON? This has been a big topic. You know, we worked this out over years. Well, the simple definition: someone who is perfectly representing Prabhupada. Who is speaking the same words, the activity, the achar, what we call, you know, that's what acharya means, by example, representing. Now, among those who are doing that, some are actually giving diksha. And in the process of giving diksha, or initiation, in which you take vows, and there's the process, you know, the process of surrender, you know, we talk of surrender. Well, that's where the confidence comes in. And there's where the GBC comes in also. In other words, there's a process of certification. You know, it's not just that anyone can demand to surrender. You surrender to me, you know. There's a process of certification. This person is truly, you know, experienced, and they're acting according to Prabhupada's instructions, and the instructions they're giving are exactly according to Prabhupada's line. Then in essence, it's not just this, that's where the faith comes in, is that you can have the faith in that person and in that activity because of the substance of the person and what they're doing and what they're saying and what they know. Now, when it comes to the Shiksha Guru, the activity, it's not normally said that you surrender like you do to Diksha Guru. But those are the people that you can hear from, and in many ways you do. You know, they instruct you to do practical service and so many different things. So it's not just Diksha Guru, it's Shiksha Guru, very important. And sometimes in your everyday life, the Shiksha Gurus can be more immediately influential. It's a fact. Or it even happens that as it's happening, Diksha Guru may leave the planet, you know. And so you're in the care of Shiksha Gurus. And we read the first chapter. Everyone interested in, you know, progressing has to read the first chapter of the Adi Lila. It deals all with the tattva of the spiritual master. You know, the shiksha and dikshu, the relationship, and, you know, how they're non-different but different, and so forth. So that, but before I ask another question, did I cover that, or do you want to add something, Maharaj? Okay.
We could keep going, but that's fine.
All right, that's a big question. Go ahead, Guru. Yeah, bring the mic around. All right.
Hare Krishna. I found one for Maharaj's questions. I found you can see Canto 9, Chapter 8, text number
22. 9, 8, 22?
Yes. And right. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada wrote, then it will be one day, it will be possible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face.
Okay. I was able to find the reference. So he's glossing. When we say gloss, like we have a glossary where it explains the names, gloss is another way of saying commenting on. So he's glossing the verse, abhavitra, abhavitra, vasa, vasa, right? So which means whether one is impure or pure, or he's been through all kinds of situations, one who chants the name of Krishna remembers Pundarikaksha, Krishna, the lotus-eyed one, becomes purified inside and out. To keep ourselves eternally clean, we should bathe 3 times a day. Internal cleanliness means the heart chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. The members of the Krishna conscious movement must always follow this principle, staying cleansed within and without. Then it will one day be possible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Right? So you're asking, when is it going to happen? You've been a member for some time and you haven't seen Krishna? What's your question? Yes, Prabhupada is speaking the truth here.
When all the demigods and they approach Krishna, then headed by Brahma, then actually, then a Brahma, Hrudaya, Adhikavanti, Murti, that, you know, then how Prabhupada is narrating that Krishna forecasted to Brahma, then Brahma to Narada, then Vyasa, then all disciplic successor. So that, but in my understanding, Dikya Guru is most important in this
what
sense.
What is the most important?
Dikya Guru is most important in this sense to see Krishna face to face, because it is already...
We are following the principle of seeing through hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not the accent. That's okay. I think I understand. Just to sum up, the words coming down, the knowledge coming down here to Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's commentary. Yes, this is our means by which we can purify the heart, so one day we can see Krishna. But in Brahma's prayers for creative energy, he has this phrase. He says, very interesting, he says, Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavata ritsa roja ase sutekshita pato nananata puksam yad yad diyata hudagayava bhavayanti tadva vapu pranayase sadanugrahaya. So you're very merciful to the sat, to the devotees. And when they follow the process of bhakti properly, bhakti yoga paribhavata, you sit on the lotus of their hearts, you appear in their hearts, according to how they meditate on you. In other words, if I'm a devotee of Ram, then the Lord will appear to me in that form, you see? But the key phrase is shuta ikshita pato. Shuta ikshita pata means literally the path of seeing through hearing. So we're back to that point of hearing. In other words, this is the means by which one day we'll see Krishna face to face. He will come to us. But we have to be very pure and advanced. Okay, next.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Prabhu.
Thank you very much. Prabhu, my question is, like number of our acharyas, they spent like many years chanting and hearing in seclusion. So I was trying to understand why they did that, because they discourage doing anything, you know, in seclusion.
They discourage doing anything?
Chanting and hearing in seclusion.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not even referring to
the acharyas in Mahabharata and Ramayana time period, like Vyasa and Narada, but like just contemporary.
No, we heard Bhaktisiddhanta has spent so many years,
So I was trying to understand why they went into seclusion to chant and hear.
The point is that there's an intensity, you know, a focus that you can get if you're able to do that, you know, when you're alone and you're chanting, you'll find oftentimes in the descriptions of Lord Chaitanya's associates or even Lord Chaitanya himself that he was off alone in a garden somewhere chanting his japa. But kirtan, he was always with many others. So that secluded, you know, part of our sadhana, you know, is meant to be the japa. Now, we're meant to, you know, chant together, but I really appreciate how in this temple, everyone chants to themselves. You know what I mean? There's also possible to chant very loudly among others, and sometimes that it's difficult to concentrate in that, but I see this is a very nice temple where everyone is considerate of others that are, you know, they're also chanting like that. So, this seclusion is a point where you get very, very concentrated and you're able to focus. The whole thing, you know, comes down. It's all integrated, just like Krishna described in the sixth chapter. You know, from wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. So there are levels of concentration and absorption all the way up to the point of samadhi, which means full, you know, unbroken attention. And sometimes I think we don't feel that that's possible for us, but that's the ideal, you know, that you're never forgetting, you're not deviating in a moment. So this is why in seclusion sometimes it's possible to do that more effectively. Now the great thing about Krishna consciousness is, well, if that's not possible, kirtan. The real yoga dharma is kirtan, you know, and even amongst all others, the more the merrier in that kind of meditation, you know, and you can become fully absorbed. So it's not really, the two work together. We'll find, you know, if you have it, can come to the kirtan. We shouldn't neglect whenever there's kirtan. We should try to take part, and that will help your japa. That will help your focus on the holy name, and vice versa. When you're chanting good rounds, you'll be much more attracted to beautiful kirtan. You know, the holy name will more easily become absorbed in chanting the holy name. That's a science. That's why Prabhupada gave both. All the Lord Chaitanya, you know. That was one of his main instructions. Chant the holy name on japa beads a certain number every day. And that standard was, in that time, 64 rounds. You know the famous the statement that he won't accept any offerings because they would all invite him for lunch. I'm not going to accept any lunch invitation unless someone is a lakpati. Luck means 100,000. So they thought it meant, oh, they have to have 100,000 rupees. And, you know, his devotees were simple. They were rich, so they were all lamenting. He laughs. He says, no, it means you chant 100,000 names at 64 rounds. So that was the standard coming to Gaudiya Math. Prabhupada made it easier for us. By his blessings, we can go back to Godhead with 16 rounds. But we have to spend all the rest of the day, you know, ideally, you know, preaching and chanting and working to spread the holy name. Maharaj?
Just want to add, his specific question, as I understood it, was why is there discouragement from Nirjan Bhajan when many great personalities seem to have done that? So just a quick, that was your question.
Oh, why are we discouraged from doing that ourselves in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness?
Well, and not only in ISKCON, but before, like Bhaktisiddhanta discouraged it.
Right. And
people are not qualified, but they would imitate those that are qualified for the wrong reasons and then spoil the reputation of sadhu.
Ah.
And do nonsense monkey business, literally.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, we have to remember You know, Bhakti Sanatana created a revolution, and one of the revolutionary things is with the organization, the real, you know, the mass organization, in which you have many mats or temples, and you have people following the same, and they're working together, you know, printing the books and distributing it. That was going on in Bhakti Sanatana's. So when it comes to that, the Nirjan Bhajan is kind of a centrifugal thing, you know, that goes off. Well, I'm doing my own thing, you know. Please don't try to engage me. I'm doing 64 rounds and going around, you know, Govardhan. That's what I'm doing for the next 6 months, you know. So don't ask me to do anything. So people have their own ideas, and it becomes, as Maharaj said, it can become a pretense. So in order to work together and to have a movement which can be effective for spreading Krishna consciousness, we need to do things together as much as possible. Now, there are times where, you know, like we go to Vrindavan, probably want us to go to Mayapur and Vrindavan for festival, where there's more time for that. Devotees say, oh, yeah, okay, well, now I can easily chant 64 rounds because that's what's going on. You know, it's just it's festival time. There's more time or extended kirtan. That's really, you know, the thing that we're into. Extended kirtans, hours and hours. You know, there's a devotee. Some of you know Jamil, famous, you know, from Montreal. He invited me to go to Brazil. They had a 72-hour kirtan. 72 hours straight, you know. I said, okay, well, people were leaving at times to take a shower. I said, no, 72 hours, you know, that was the standard, you stay there. And I said, now we're going to do 108 hours of kirtan. I said, oh, my God, inconceivable, you know. I don't know if that, you know, but at least, you know, hours, that was the standard in the movement. You know, this is how the movement engine started. Devotees would go out for hours on Harinam and become so purified just from chanting Hare Krishna on the street. And then, you know, they would be able to follow the principles and move on from there, and that's how it developed. So there's a time for that. Just like here in this festival, it's so many times kirtan is going on, we shouldn't neglect it. So this is our, you know, this is how we get more bhajan in. But mostly we're into doing things together because it fosters honesty, you know. Yeah.
This is coming from Maharaj's question. It's a follow-up question to your answer. Lord Chaitanya says in the CC, Ye Krishna Tattva Veda Se Guru Hoy, that this is the, like, I guess a general qualification of a guru, that he knows the science of Krishna.
Right.
And in another purport in the Anjalila Prabhupada talks about how a Vaishnava is self-effulgent.
Uh-huh.
Which is maybe something you can comment on also in your answer. My question is stemming from your answer about a GBC certified guru. My question is that what if one does not have any attraction or faith in those who are GBC certified gurus, but they know the science of Krishna as such, and one's heart is more attracted towards such personalities? Now, I see the value in a GBC-certified guru system in terms of managing the institution, but my question is just more philosophically speaking. If my heart is attracted to someone who's not GBC-certified, but who knows the science of Krishna, how does that work out in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness? Well, the Diksha Guru, Okay, let's say Diksha Guru, someone that I want to surrender myself to receive mantras from, etc. So let's say Diksha Guru. That's
well, there's two possible understandings of that. One is that person is still within ISKCON, or sometimes they're outside of ISKCON. And I'm not sure what you're referring to. within ISKCON. Yeah. Well, it's very hard to, this came up a long time ago, to legislate the heart, you know, that this, I have faith in this person. And there are different things that can take place. One is that you can wait. In other words, generally speaking, someone who has some that kind of influence, they after some time they'll also become a Diksha Guru. That's one thing that may happen. But if that's not feasible, and you know you have an urgency. After all, there is an urgency at a certain time in your devotional life where you really want to get initiated and take that important step, then that may not be, you know, feasible. The person say, well, I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, initiating anytime soon like that. So then there can be a relationship that can develop, because usually if someone is within ISKCON, they're working in a certain area. And there are, you know, maybe some initiated guru in that area. But what is the relationship between that person who has gleaned your faith and the one or more Diksha gurus who are generally, you know, initiating in that area? You know, we don't have zonal anymore, but or with the guru varga in general, you know, the Diksha guru varga, let's call it, the number of Diksha gurus. So there can be some kind of relationship developed there that said, okay, yes, this person, you know, you can get a lot of shikshas from them, but I'll give you the, you know, the holy name and the vows. So really, because the surrender process, the way I see it, it's not just that you're taking, because surrender means taking shelter also, you know. You're taking shelter also of the whole institution. Because, you know, honestly speaking, we've had over the years, injury to the movement, because people who've taken shelter of others, you know, then the person goes off. Well, what happens to those devotees? And the encouragement, well, you still have shelter within ISKCON. You have shelter under Prabhupada. And ultimately, if the faith is built up again, you can take shelter, you know, shelter of someone else. I mean, this is practically what's happened. And you say, well, okay, I don't want to risk that, you know. And therefore, a lot of things have happened. I don't want to get into all the details, but in order for the movement to go on, we've developed this parallel lines, you know, that it's not just because other institutions, you know, when it breaks up and it's just the guru, and if the guru is not, you know, meeting the standard, then everyone is lost. So the Prabhupada's strength, his, you know, coming from Bhaktisiddhanta was the GBC. It's not just you and your guru and that's it. There's a whole array of senior devotees that can, you know, protect you. So it's a difficult thing. It's not something that, you know, you can speak of and this is the only way it's going to work. But its faith can develop in a certain person, and then that can be also enhanced by one of the other initiating gurus.
I'd like to add something.
Sure.
Real quick.
Okay.
Two things. Supporting what you said at the very end, I would personally like to see the culture move in the direction of what's real, which is there are many persons that were receiving shelter from and receiving Krishna Katha, and, you know, and Dipyagan, and, you know, everything from an array of personalities. At the same time, the second point, the taking shelter of feeling the calling to, you know, especially I feel affinity for this particular person who, for whatever the reason is not in any the near future wishing to be a Diksha Guru for others, or isn't going to do that. Then, as you described, it's a little embellishment of, you know, the relationship of that person who I may then receive diksha from, the relationship of that person and the shiksha person who I feel a special affinity for is really important.
That's important.
Really important. So there's resonance. I'm not going to get two different signals. Exactly. I'm going to get resonance and harmony.
Yeah.
And if there's any, you know, disharmony, they'll work it out because, you know, they have that kind of relationship with it. They'll work it out.
Any easy questions? We have 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Quick one.
One question for Maharaj. This is a common question going in an ashram that, let's say, if a person is initiated in ISKCON, disciplic succession by a particular Maharaj, and he is not getting what he wants in this ISKCON movement, he is not getting enough information, enough knowledge, or enough Krishna consciousness, what he wants in this movement. Is that person allowed to go in different Gaudiya Math to get the same, because he's getting some high information in that particular mud, that is, it is bona fide or it is good or it's appropriate to go there and get information from there, or stick to the process and follow the same line?
It's not appropriate. That's what I would say. This is one of the, you know, wonderful things that's happened is that, for instance, we have these books that have come out from Shivaram Swami. And I remember when they first started to come out, one of the reasons he wrote the books was precisely because devotees were feeling, oh, I want to get this nectar over here. So he wrote this book. You read the Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani. It's a complete exposition of all of the aspects of Raganuga and everything like that, and what it takes to really advance in that line. The question is, who's competent to teach that book? That's another thing, but the knowledge is available. The knowledge is available from within society, and you know, as I said earlier, you know, if you go out, you also cut yourself off from Srila Prabhupada's institution, and it's very possible to cut yourself off from Prabhupada entirely, you know, because as Prabhupada said famously back in 1967, you know, when it appeared that he might, you know, leave the planet at that time. And one devotee asked, you know, well, Prabhupada, should we ask one of your godbrothers to come and take over? And Prabhupada didn't say anything, and he cried, you know, the tears, said, oh, my guru saved me, you know. And it's actually, offensive to think that someone else would come in. So, and he said, if they say one word different from what I've told you, it'll cause havoc. So this is the danger, is that you'll get confused and there can be, a big disruption. So if you want Prabhupada's, you know, grace and mercy, and somehow or other find out how to do it in ISKCON. And there's so much teaching going on. There's so many courses you should be able to find. Maharaj, you have the last word on this? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Hare Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.